Are we on? Sweet. Good morning, everyone. How's it going? Is everyone enjoying the conference so far? Did you bring dress shoes or tennis shoes? Yeah. They made me wear dress shoes. I wasn't very fond of the idea. I'm already paying the penalty. I'm going to try to quit whining now. My socks? So what you said? Oh, take my shoes off. Yeah, there we go. What will they say about that? All right, so my name is Aaron Nelson. I'm a database architect. This is PowerShell Dirty Dozen using PowerShell and SQL Server. That's not what you're intending to watch. Well, too late. They've already closed the doors. You're hosed. Let's see. Let me get on with this thing. All right. So again, my name is Aaron Nelson. I'm a SQL Server MVP. I am not a PowerShell MVP. All right. I don't want to insult the PowerShell MVPs. Okay. I dabble in PowerShell. All right. Certified database developer. Ooh, it's getting a little ring to it. BI, all kinds of stuff. My email address is aaron@sqlvariant.com. If you have questions about today, if you try out one of the scripts back at your office and it doesn't work and you've got questions, please don't hesitate to email me. I've been answering email questions from people who attended my session 2 years ago. My blog is at sqlvariant.com. Today, of all days, I got an IM from one of my friends in Australia that he said, "Hey, I think your blog's down." I was like, "Are you kidding me? Of course it's down today. It's like, you know, the most important day for it to be working, so of course it's down." So normally you can get to the scripts, slide decks, all that stuff on my blog, except for today apparently. Well, I'll make the call to support after we're done. Twitter, I'm on Twitter. How many of you are on Twitter? That's nowhere near enough of you. Okay, the rest of you should get on Twitter. Let me go ahead and, yeah, let me pull the audience. How many people have used PowerShell before? Sweet. We are so skipping two of the scripts. All right. Which is good because one of them is like four scripts combined. So that'll speed things up. Then how many people here are sysadmins? How many people here are DBAs? Wow, I didn't know that many DBAs came here. How many people here are application developers? How many people here are more than one or more than two of those or more than one of those? Perfect, close enough. All right, lots of that. Lovely. How many here are Oracle DBAs? I'm sorry. But there's a fix for that. All right, I'm not gonna get into that. So anyways, for those of you who are on Twitter and are DBAs, or doesn't matter either way, how many of you are familiar with the SQL help hashtag? Just a handful. Okay, so I'll just tell you about that real quick. So there's a hashtag out there, you just throw it on the end. If you've got a question about SQL Server, people from around the world, they monitor the tag, they'll help answer your question. So if you've got a question about this or some other DBA topic, put a tweet out there, put the SQL help hashtag on there, someone will answer your question. And I monitor it as well, but you know, times like right now, I can't really get to it, but maybe later today. So I'm getting ready to dive into the rest of this slide deck. All right, get on time so far. When working with SQL Server and PowerShell, there's a lot of different ways to get your information out of the SQL Server. You can use standard Windows PowerShell commandlets like get-service. You can use the SQL Server PowerShell commandlets. In 2008, we had a grand total of 5 commandlets. We've really upped that number multiple hundreds of percent. We have 24 new commandlets in the next one. That's astounding, right? 29 total, Everyone, no applause? No. Oh, I'm shocked. All right. Okay, maybe I'm not. All right, so WMI, you can get to it through get WMI object. There's all kinds of things that you can get to with SQL Server by querying WMI. You can use .NET. You can use ADO.NET. You can use the SMO. These are all kind of easier on the left to harder on the right if you've never worked with it before. That's one question I forgot to ask. How many people have never used PowerShell before? One, two, good. All right, like five. All right. So when working with SQL Server and PowerShell, you can't avoid using the SMO, pretty much, but you can at least hide it. And that way you don't have to go writing SMO code every time. Now, maybe you're the world's biggest SMO fan. That might be great, but your coworkers, even if you are, your coworkers probably aren't. So using abstraction layers to get to the SMO is a really good idea. And thankfully, there's a wonderful abstraction layer written for the SMO that we're gonna talk about next. I think, if I remember the slides. Nope, one more slide after this. Sorry, SMO is it's shared management objects, and it's the back end of how everything works inside of SQL Server Management Studio. It's a great question. Thank you for asking that. Is everyone here familiar with SQL Server Management Studio? Right? If you're not, then I really am not going to be able to teach you much here today. Sorry. All right. So. When we load up the provider, which was one of our options on the last slide, it's how we can navigate SQL Server like a hard drive. When we load up that provider, we can come in here and we can talk to the relational database engine just like we're an Object Explorer inside of SQL Server Management Studio. We can navigate it just the same, but we can actually get more information than is actually available to or presented to us inside of Object Explorer inside of SQL Server Management Studio. So you've got more info you can get to. We can also get to policy-based management, your registered servers, which is really important for me if you have more than two, data collection, SQL Server extended events, utility control point. I don't use it, so I assume that's what utility means. Integration services and analysis services. A lot of this was added, or at least analysis services, integration services, that was all added, as well as extended events in 2012. It wasn't in the previous version. So great to have those new things joining in there. If I hurry, I might get to an integration services example. So I don't have any analysis services examples today. So let's see. Make sure I covered everything on that slide. Oh, I didn't know I was going to do that. All right. So just the basics for anyone who hasn't used the SQL Server provider before. Traversing it is kind of like navigating through a hard drive. If you've worked with any of the other providers, you're probably already expecting this. It's real easy to navigate. If you've used Object Explorer, you already kind of know what you're going to do with it. You can get to... You go to the SQL Server drive after you load the module, go to SQL, just for redundancy, I guess. Go to localhost, then you need your instance name. If you don't have a named instance, then you use default. If you do have a named instance, the second line there, it's got an example for you for how to use a named instance. And then you go to databases, type the dir command, and you see a list of your databases. In SQL Server 2008, it had a pretty much always it would come back and it would tell you everything about your objects. It would just almost like it was doing get member on every single database. And it would spit out, it would puke out just way too much information. With SQL Server 2012, they've made some tweaks to that, and it's more common to what you see initially when you go into Object Explorer or Object Explorer details inside of Management Studio. So it's a good bit more user-friendly. So that's one of the key basics. And then hopefully, this is the last slide. So we can get to the demos. Don't script, that's important. I know as SQL, all the DBAs in the crowd are like, what? That's impossible. What I really mean by that is write PowerShell functions and then execute the functions and maybe save what values you're gonna pass in a script. But write reusable functions, put them in a module if you wanna get fancy, or just leave them in a directory. Use the PowerShell SQL PSX if you just wanna use that. But don't write your own scripts that are doing the exact same thing but slightly different, and it's like 900 rows of code. If you're not familiar with PowerShell as a DBA, the functions are kind of like stored procedures, right? Don't take it too literally. They don't have execution plans or anything like that. It's just a modular piece of code. You call it and you can pass it parameters, much like a stored procedure. So write functions or use functions. Try not to go with too many lines of code, especially if you're touching the SMO, because other people will take a look at it and go, wow, this is really hard. I don't want to have to support this. Those are my observations as a SQL Server MVP. So those are best practices, recommendations for you. And then the number one best practice for working with SQL Server really is, I know it says second, but SQL PSX. SQLPSX.codeplex.com. Chad Miller and quite a few other people have gone ahead and written some functions for you, over 160 for them for you. If you're working with Oracle, there's actually a handful that are for Oracle too. I don't know what they do because I don't have Oracle where I work, so you can tell me. But all kinds of stuff that you want to do, add a database, add a file group to a database, add a file to a file group in a database, all kinds of stuff like that are pre-written for you so that you don't have to mess with the SMO code and figure it out and navigate it and learn it. It's already taken care of for you. Just go through there, do the get help, and you'll be good to go. And yes, demos, my favorite part. Did anyone want more slides? I'm just checking. All right, wow, that's huge. Sorry, I was practicing in here a little bit earlier. Let me go ahead and close this out. Hey, my blog finally showed back up. So since so many people know PowerShell, I will ever so briefly touch on this one. So we've got, let me bump that up a little bit. Can the people in the back see that? Anyone that can't see it? No? No complaints? All right, cool. We're off. All right, so with PowerShell, you've got commandlets. They've got a verb-noun way of being named. Here we've got one where we've got get-service, so it's going to go get us a list of all the services on the server. It's going to get everything for us and bring it back. We can take that information, and if you're on a DBA, you're a DBA person, haven't ever done PowerShell before, you're gonna like the fact that you can pipe it to this thing called where-object, and you can say where display name match SQL, and then you'll get a list back of just your SQL instances. You wanna do that to display name because you know how like reporting services starts with an R, not an S, not with SQL, so that's why you wanna do display name. Another way of doing it is just putting these stars around SQL, and then you'll be able to get it as well. And it'll get you back a list of your SQL Server services, which you can see I have a plethora of on my laptop. Right. So there's anything else? If you want to do discovery on your network, how many people here are the domain admins on their domain? Okay, so this next part, do it with caution. And since I'm not a domain admin, I've never been able to do it myself. So don't blame me if it does something bad. It shouldn't, but test it first on a, you know, some kind of practice domain. You surely have one of those, right? I forgot to tell you about my service guarantee. I've got two service guarantees here. The first one is that if you miss something, you know, I'm working the booth downstairs in the SQL Server portion, come down, ask me questions, I'll have my laptop with me, send me an email, I'll help you out, no problem. The other service guarantee is bad jokes, okay? There's gonna be a few. Although they did ask me to cut back. Apparently some of them were real bad. So anyways, on this one, get WMI object, this is one of the easiest ways of finding out if a machine has SQL Server installed. This is the proper SQL Server, meaning not integration services, not analysis services, not anything like that. This is the relational engine. So if you run this query here, get WMI object, and you have the path name, have it look for sqlserver.exe. When you find that, then you know you've got SQL Server installed. So if you want to go search all your machines and see if they've got SQL installed, and maybe someone didn't tell you that they installed SQL there, you can find out using this. This is one of the best ways that I've ever found to, no matter what, get back a true result. Obviously, the map toolkit, that's excellent as well, but if you want to do it in PowerShell, here's a way. Highly recommend. All right, so let's go into get PS drive. If we do get PS drive real quick, clear my output. We see we've got a bunch of, let me pull this up so you can see the full thing. When we do get PS drive, we see that we've got my hard drives here. We can see that one of them is almost out of space. It's gonna be great if I accidentally back up too much data. It's gonna crash. Have to remember that during that demo. We see that we can see the registry. We can navigate into there. Those of you familiar with PowerShell, you're like, yeah, we know that. Variables, for the SQL people who haven't used PowerShell, this is a wonderful thing. PowerShell, it persists the state of your variable. You set a variable to a value, you come back 5 minutes later, it's still there as long as you haven't cleared it or something. So you run a script, you run it again, you've got that value sitting in the variable, you can reuse it, you don't have to reset it if you didn't, you know, otherwise clear it. You can also go to the variable drive and inspect it, see what variables have been created, and you can have a look to what value they're set to right now. So it's a great thing. On that list, you'll notice that there's not one for SQL Server. SQL Server 2012, we had snap-ins in 2008. Now with 2012, we've got a module. We've got two modules. One of them is for the relational engine, and with it brings the 29 commandlets and the provider. The other module is for analysis services. It brings 11 commandlets for that product. You see down here at the warning line, it says it doesn't have analysis services on this machine. It does. It just always says that. So don't be surprised. For whatever reason, my machine decided we're going to go slow as molasses this week. So I was tempted to go in there and find out what's going wrong and fix everything, but then I was like, yeah, I should do that after the presentation. So, got to talk my way through this one. The module comes with SQL Server Management Studio. So if you don't even have to install full-blown SQL Server to have this, all you have to install is Management Studio. There's a way that you can install it, usually with the dev tools, and just install a couple EXEs, and then boom, you don't even have to have Management Studio. I haven't tried that yet with 2012, but hopefully they've improved the process. All right. So when we go back in here and do get PS drive one more time, see we've got the SQL Server drive here. That's our SQL Server provider, and basically that's much akin to going into Object Explorer and then being able to navigate Object Explorer. And I'll just go ahead and open Management Studio just to give you a little comparison here. And as soon as that pops up, and in the meantime, I'll go ahead and go to the next. the R2 instance. Now, you'll see today I'm doing a mix of both. I have an R2 instance on my machine. Some of you might guess that that might be SQL Server 2008 R2. You'd be right. And then the default instance is SQL Server 2012. So here we are in Object Explorer. I'll even zoom it. Here we are in Object Explorer. And we've got our information here. It's great information. We can get to our databases. That's cool. We're all used to this. If we come to databases and we hit F7, I've already done that by default, we get a lot of additional information that we can go ahead and pull back from the databases. See, if you right-click here, you can pick on things like the last backup date, the size, data space use, index space use. Great pieces of information to have, but they're not there by default. So you have to go and do that and right click. The reason I point that out, besides trying to help you out with how to navigate through Management Studio, is that anything you see on this list is going to be available to you within PowerShell. So even if you're new to PowerShell, you don't know, is this piece of information about a database available? Go there, right click that list. See if it's on there. If it is, guess what? You're going to be able to get to it. When you highlight one of these databases, you'll see it comes up with a bunch of information down here. This is actually when you grab an object, all that information is coming back in PowerShell. In SQL Server 2008, in the Management Studio tools, you would see that all the time. It would dump out all that information all at once, just when you said, you know, I want to go find out what the names of my databases are. By default, it would bring back this truckload of information. Again, in 2012, they've slimmed it down to what the default for Management Studio is. All right, I think that is, let me go into tables and just show you again here. I've gone into a database, I've gone into tables. It's got my list of tables, and I've right-clicked on the top, and we can see the additional information. A lot of the check marks near the bottom are not there by default, so you have to go in there and grab them, but that's the information you can get back in PowerShell. Key point, and it's going to come up in one of the scripts later, data space use comes back in kilobytes, not bytes. So when you use this, you know, /1MB, that gets you /1 gigabyte. So it actually, you're up one more size than you were expecting. So just to help you with that when we get to that part of the script. So that is it for Management Studio. All right, back to scripts. Yes, oh, thank you. Wonderful question. So, know how to type one of these, I swear. /TechEd12. All lowercase. Make that gigantic. Sorry, yes, I've made all of these scripts already available. bit.ly/TechEd12. I guess it would actually be easier if I make it closer to the bottom of the screen for those of you taking the picture. I don't think I've ever been in a session where people took pictures of the what's on the screen before. I'm sorry. It's a, yeah. It's crazy. All right. Yeah. So please download those scripts, play along, email them to friends. And by friends, I kind of mean coworkers, not like Facebook friends, you know, like real friends. See? Bad jokes. Told you they were coming. All right, back to this. Alrighty. We're gonna go into your in PS Drive real quick, finish this up real fast, and then get boogie in on some other stuff. So in here, real quick, how many people, this is PowerShell 3.0 ISE. How many people here like it better than the 2.0 one? Just a handful. How many people have used the PowerShell 2 ISE and not tried the PowerShell 3 ISE? Not tried it. Okay, it's worth a try. It's awesome. Spin up a virtual machine, check it out. It's actually a heck of a lot easier for navigating and getting commands because it does auto-complete for you. And does things like this, server instance, database, if I give it a database, I gotta type that in, but anytime where it's got something where it is a like a yes, no option, it's gonna tell you that. It's a beautiful thing. So I'll do get dash command, and then do cmd command type, right, top one. And then as soon as I hit the space, it knows that these are the only available options to pick from, and I can just, you know, up arrow, down arrow, get to the one that I want, dash module, and then SQL PS, and then run that, and then it'll get me the list of commands back. So that was a real quick, easy way, and it built it for me and helped me out. So, you know, totally, like if you're trying to learn PowerShell, this is actually gonna help you a lot more than the old PowerShell 2 ISE. So highly recommend it. Even if you have to put it in a virtual machine, it's gonna help you out. Let's dive into this one fast. All right, so I'm gonna go ahead and change directories. Let me clear my screen real quick. I'm gonna change directories, and localhost our default database. Of course, why are you doing that to me? Oh, right, there's not an r2/default, sorry. SQL Server /SQL, that's what. Localhost default databases, hold on. Let's try this manually. So it might take a sec. Tab completion, you think? Oh, right. But I'm gonna see if I can actually, maybe I don't have, oh right, I don't have AdventureWorks there, it's 2012. That was, yeah. I knew I figured it out. All right, so I've got the AdventureWorks 2012 database loaded up, not the AdventureWorks, at least I think I do. Not sure why it's taken quite so long. See this note right up here at the top? Yeah. All right, so it's not a space. It should be. So hold on, let me see the databases. Yes. And then do a dir. Okay. Sorry about that. I've been up since 5 o'clock this morning checking and rechecking all these scripts, and I must have put in a typo like after I checked it. So it's like a little time bomb. All right. So now I'm finally here in the tables directory that I had been trying to get to. If I do a dir here, again, it comes back with the information, my list of tables. It's got my schema, it's got my name. It used to be it would come back with a truckload of information about every table. I mean, we're like talking 40 values for the table. So they've slimmed that down in 2012. It's a great thing. If we come down here and we do a get item, and the table that we want to get is called production.transactionHistory. If we do a get item, it goes, pulls that for us. What we're going to do is we're going to spin up a variable, and we're going to pipe this get item, or set the variable equal to this get item. So we're going to store that in there. And so just to prove to you that it is so, we see that it's a type of table. And if this were a little bit smaller, it'd say microsoft.sqlserver.sml. So it knows that it's a SQL Server table. Since it knows that it's not just any old table, it's a SQL Server table, it knows all kinds of things about it. You can find out what it knows about what it can do by taking it and piping it to get-member, and it'll tell you all the methods and properties. For all of you that have been working with PowerShell, you're like, yeah, we know this. For those of you that haven't done it, methods are verbs. The properties, those are adjectives, basically, about the table. So you can do things like add a column to it. You can drop the table. I don't recommend doing that too often. You can do your grants, rebuild indexes, recalculate the space usage, just like doing SP space use with an update usage. So these are all things that you can do to your table. Among them is script. So here we've gone ahead and we've grabbed the table and we put it into this variable. And now by adding a period and script with open close paren, we're going to call the script method on that table. And it's gone ahead and done that for us and output a message. Where it's got the create table there, just like you would expect to see in Management Studio. This particular way of doing it, by default, does not have a drop statement on it. And so when I was tooling around, I was like, all right, cool. Now I just need a drop statement. So I was like, I don't see a script drop. And I saw a dot, a dropped method. And I was like, I was thinking it had script on the brain. So I went, oh, a drop, that's exactly what I want. Punched in drop, boom, table disappears. Whoops. I was happy with AdventureWorks. So I have written a blog for scripting guys. Is everyone in here subscribed to the scripting guys blog? Or yes, no, not too many? Well, I wrote a blog on how to include the drop statements in there for you. All right, so on to additional information. Right. So one best practice for you when working on when working within the provider, I try to not be inside of SQL Server, and I try to be back in my temp directory. That way, I don't don't accidentally do something stupid, the tab completion works better when you're just back at your C drive or somewhere else. When you're inside the SQL Server provider, it can get a little flaky. So it's a quick best practice. All right, so when we've got the module loaded up, we've got invoke SQL command. Invoke SQL command allows us to run a query against a database and get back an answer. Bump this up just a smidge more. Here, what I'm going to do is dbcc log info. I don't know how familiar you are with that, but when you run dbcc log info, it gives you back a bunch of information pertaining to the log. One of the pieces of information is how many virtual log files you have. New feature to SQL Server 2012 is that if you have more than 1,000 virtual log files, it'll actually put an error message into your error log, because that can be a performance problem. If you've got SQL Server 2008, you don't have this capability yet, but you could go gather that information up really quickly. Just run invoke SQL command, and you've got your dbcc log info. I'm going to go ahead and run it for you real quick. Host database against the master database. Comes back and gives me three rows of information back. It gives you one row of information back for each log file that you've got. So it's handy. But if it came back with a whole bunch of them, I wouldn't want to sit there and count them. What you can do is you can take the result set, pipe it to measure, and it'll give you the count for how many came back. All right, so that's basic. That's just getting up to speed. But if we get a full screen on this one, if we take that information, I'm just going to remove my where clause on here just to make this a little bit smaller query. It could fit on the screen a little better. Maybe bring down the resolution just a smidge. Oops. Actually, and go ahead and leave that there. So real quick tip on what I'm doing here with line completion. Normally you have to do back ticks inside of commands to be able to make them wrap. Otherwise, you have to either be inside of a select, or you have to have hit a pipe, and then you can go to the next line. Once you write a query, you can use extra spacing, and so you can format it and make it look a lot nicer, a lot easier to read, and have it fit on the screen a lot better. Here, what I'm going to do is one of my favorite things. How many people here use registered servers inside of Management Studio? Okay. How many people here use Central Management Server? Okay, just about as many. Okay, you can get to Central Management Server, and you can get to registered servers from inside the PowerShell provider. You just go to SQL Server, go to SQL Registrations, like I said, it's inside the script. Here, Database Engine Server Group is where you go for registered servers. Otherwise, there's also CMS. This little add-on thing here, where mode not equal to D, that makes sure that you don't get any folders. So you can do a recurse on that. You can go, you can have a subtree of multiple levels of servers, of instances, and you can return all that information back. And then you can loop through all those instances and go run a query against all those instances. Inside of here, what I'm doing is I'm going to run a query once to get a list of servers back up here. I'm going to get that information out of the PowerShell provider. And then next, I'm going to do a for each. And I'm going to run invoke SQL command. And I'm going to get a list of my databases back. When I get my list of databases back, then inside of here, I'm going to run invoke SQL command and get DBCC log info. And then if I want to pipe that out to measure, then I can get back a list of my databases and the virtual log files that they have. So if I find one that's got a couple hundred or maybe 1,000, I can go in there and I can rebuild the log file and make that perform a little better. You could use the same approach. I just picked DBCC log info as just the example for today. You could do it for getting file sizes out of your databases, table sizes. You could use it for, there could be some query that you've got to pull, pull a table out of every single database on your system. No idea what you might need to use it for, but this using this approach with the double loop, being able to basically cursor through each one of your SQL Server instances and then go to each database. You can throw a where clause onto your database so you can filter it down, you can supply a list. This is extremely handy, and it's like one of the top things that I find helpful with SQL Server and SQL Server and PowerShell. This is probably the number one thing worth learning PowerShell for, is to be able to loop through and grab this information and save your elbow and your wrist and not get carpal tunnel from using the mouse constantly. So. Did everyone follow that example? Okay. All right, good. Another one that I've got in here, it's called Worst Practices Analyzer. Used to work at a company where we had some databases that auto shrink was turned on. They were running out of space, things like that. We cobbled together some information off a couple of different blogs and put together a chunk of code that would go through. It's running slow as molasses here, but when it gets to the good part, it'll go through, hit every database, query information off of each one, look for things like auto shrink and stuff like that, look for the recovery mode. And in this case, I have it set up as if it were going against a dev environment. So in a dev environment, I want everything sent to simple. You can go in there and switch that and put it back. But you see how it's got space available, and I think the setting is if it's less than 20% space available, then go ahead and flag it in red. This was a very nice, let me see how many lines of code. 70 some odd lines of code, wow. 60 some odd lines of code to put together and go through and get this information. And then all you need is a list of your servers. It could be in a text file, which is in what this example is, or you could be querying your registered servers, your central management server. You could query it out of a table if you've got a list of your instances stored there. It'll go through, collect all this information. You see now it's going on to the second instance on the machine, going through, looping through all that. It's taking a while to build that part, and then it'll go and get the rest of that information. Since it's taken so long, I'm just going to go ahead and move to the next one so I can make sure I can get them all fit in. Backups. All right. With this one, it's one of my favorite features of, besides the ISE itself, PowerShell 3.0, the OutGrid view has the ability to do pass-through. Now what pass-through is when you get to something where you do a selection, if you can do compare-object and get me the different rows, on a certain value. So you can compare, let's say you compared two tables and you compared just on modified date. And if, you know, if modified date was greater on one table than the other, then you just wanted to pull the whole row, but you didn't want to inspect every single column. Well, what pass-through allows you to do, it allows you to narrow your search down to a certain property or a certain column on an object, do that decision, and then when you have pass-through there, it takes the entire object, not just that value that you got. So if you said modified date and then didn't use the pass-through, the only thing that would get moved over to update would be the modified date, not the rest of the row. So the pass-through is a beautiful thing. I think actually I have a script of Jeff's where you can go and get all the commandlets that have pass-through as a parameter. I think that was you. Or you tweeted it. Yeah. So, all right. I got it by way of Jeff. And pass-through here has now been added out grid view. And hopefully that other script is finished. Yes, it has. All right. Let's see. Import module SQL PS. Just double checking everything here. Out grid view. I'm going to go ahead and show you my backup directory. So I already got one backup in there, but it's for the LT database. So for this example, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the list of databases using get-sql database. I think that's actually coming out of the SQL Server module is SQL PSX. So I'm going to get a list of my databases for this instance. Don't mean to jump around like that. I want to be able to show you the results. So it's going to return me back that list of databases. Simple, basic, right? And I'm going to pass it to OutGridView. So it's going to come up in OutGridView. And then it's going to have a decision point. And it's going to pause here while I make my decision. And then it's going to pass through whatever I decide on over to backup-SQL database. Go ahead and fire off that full command for you right now. So it goes ahead and pops this up for me. I'm actually going to use Zoom it to make sure everyone can see it. Can the people in the back see that okay? Yep, I see head nodding. All right, so it's given me a list of all my databases on that machine. Let's say for whatever reason, I don't want to back them all up right now. Right? In this scenario, I just want to back up the ones that have that are the data warehouse ones. Right? So they've got DW in the name. Well, here I can add a filter on the name and just have it look for DW. And right there, just that fast, it went ahead and slimmed it down to just my DW databases. So now I've got my list of my DW databases. That's great. I want to back them up right now. So I just come in here, highlight them all, and zoom in here. I need to click this OK button down here in the corner. And when I click that OK, that's when the pass-through happens. So I'm going to switch over real quick. And it happened so fast you could barely see it. It popped up on the screen and gave you a progress bar of your backup of each one as it was doing it. And then you can see we've got my databases right here. They've just been backed up. Now, this example is for backing up. And does this really make sense to a SQL Server DBA? Probably not, unless you got like 10,000 databases on a SQL Server, which I'm pretty sure isn't recommended. I think that's beyond what they recommend. But the point is, you can filter without grid view and then pass your results on. For all I know, you may want to write this to do comparisons or to grab stored procedures, or maybe just grab most recent ones. Use this as a way to tell which ones you want to have scripted out and then pipe them and have them scripted out for you. All right. There are tons and tons and tons of uses for that. So it's one of the things I think is the coolest for 2012. And that backup SQL database, that is a new commandlet for SQL Server 2012. Now again, I did put this together in this way on purpose to show you that you can use the backup SQL database against a SQL Server 2008 R2 instance, and it will still work, because it knows how to call that SMO and it knows how to work with it just like it would in Management Studio. So if you expect it to work in Management Studio, a 2012, to be able to connect to a 2008 or a 2005 and be able to do the work, you can expect the same thing out of PowerShell using the SQL provider or using any of the commandlets or the SML. All right. Let's see, five. Let's go to six. What's six? Gonna skip over that one for now. It's kind of more of a fun one. We'll go to table sizes in a minute. I'm gonna show you one of the most useful ones that I think I've ever built. I think it's probably the script that has been used the most out of anything I've ever written. Never thought it would be. Like, I just wrote it because I was literally being lazy. Yeah, how come it's not a function? Great question. Wow, yeah. He's a PowerShell MVP, by the way. So, yeah, it's great, great question. So what's going on here? Wow, it's my lucky day. All right, so how many of you are familiar with the SQL Server MCM certification? Raise your hand. Okay, not too many people then? All right, well, so there's a master certification that you can get in SQL Server. And to help people out, because it costs a lot of money to take the test, Microsoft and the SQL team had a group of people from SQL Skills and a couple other companies, I think, put together a list of videos. I think there's like 54 of them or something like that. And they're between 30 minutes and an hour long, depending on the topic. Great information. Even if you're not planning on going and getting the certification, you should, you know, download these videos, watch them at work, watch them at home, wherever. And it's free training for you. I like free. I don't know about you guys. Let me also point out on my blog, which looks hideous today, it's this script right here, on the which is normally on the top bar, PowerShell script to download the SQL MCM videos. Let me zoom back in and make it so you can actually read it. What this does is it goes out to this RSS feed that I just had open. So they put together an RSS feed and it had the 50 videos on it. And initially it only had like the first 30. So it goes out to the RSS feed and it says, all right, tell me where the hyperlinks are to those other videos. And then it goes to that page and then it says, look for, and then I had to learn regex that day. This line of the script took just over 4 hours. And I kept on thinking, this is going to save time in the end. This is going to save time in the end. This is going to save. So it looks for anything with a WMV end to the name of the file, and then passes it along, does some regex matching, and then puts it into your default videos folder on your machine. If your C drive is close to out of space, this will take it all the way there. I guarantee it. It'll go ahead and download them one at a time. I even put stupid jokes inside of my scripts, as you can see. The reason I point this out, though, is I literally took this same portion of code and reused it later on when I needed to do some cycling through for compressing indexes, which is the next script I'm about to show you. Table sizes. How many people here are using Enterprise Edition? Okay, good number, right. So if it was like five people, this wasn't gonna be very impressive then. So I'm glad there's lots of people using it. So in Developer Edition or in Enterprise Edition, you can compress your tables and you can compress your indexes and you can compress them at the page level or at the row level, yada, yada, yada. If you want more information on that, watch one of those videos. What I've done here is put together first how this started out. This is the combo script where it's like three or four in one. Let me switch my viewing pane here so that you can see this hopefully better. Put together a script, and it starts out simple, right? We just go get a list of our databases, right? I've set some variables. So I've got my repository instance. So I'm going to go and I'm going to grab information about what the size is before and after. So I'm going to go grab the size, stick it into a table, go compress some tables, then come back, store the size of it, and then do a compare for a before and after, right? So I'm going to set some variables. I'm going to end up compressing stuff on my R2 instance. I'm going to track the information on what I'm doing on my SQL Server 2012 instance. Before I can do that, I don't have a database called Central Info, so I'm going to go ahead and add it. Actually, I might not have deleted it earlier today. Find out here in a second. There's two ways that you can add a database with, well, I guess there's three. You could write SMO, and it would take like 50 lines, right? You could use invoke SQL command and just say, very simply, create database and give it a database name, and boom, it's done. Or you can use the add SQL database that comes with SQL PSX, and it will it's got those 50 lines of SMO code pre-written for you, and it will go ahead and add the database for you. All right, so I'll go ahead and delete this database real quick. All right, invoke SQL command. Nope. I was just showing you that. I'm going to run that. Boom. I'm going to set these. I didn't want to have to retype these names, so I'm going to put them into variables real quick. I'm going to go ahead and build a table. Then I'm going to use get SQL database from SQL PSX. It's going to get me a whole bunch of different databases. I'm going to pipe that information over to get SQL table. Now, I'm going to get all of them, all the databases, then all the tables on the instance, and then I'm going to select this information out. Now, I'm piping the results here. If I don't do it, it's going to give me that truckload of information that I keep talking about. So I'm going to slim it down using select. Select is kind of pretty darn similar to select in SQL Server. You know, you give it a comma separated list of names, boom, you're done, right? Except that it's got a little couple add-on capabilities. One of them is dash first. So if I do dash first 3 and then give it my list of names, then it's like doing top, same thing, right? If you sort before you get there, it'll do bottom, you know, you got, or last, depending on which lingo you wanted to go on. Additional piece of information is expand property. So basically in PowerShell, there are times when you can have like a foreign keyed subtable of information inside of a property, and if you do expand property, it'll unwind all that for you. So I'm going to undo all that, but that's some important things. And then the last most important thing is, if you don't know what these are, what these options are, you of course could use get member, or you could do select star, and that'll spit out the information for you. So I had I'd been using PowerShell for over a year before I had ever bothered to try that. I was really mad at myself that I hadn't tried it earlier. So can save you a lot of time. All right, so I've got some functions that are inside of that download. One of them is alt-datatable. The other one is write-datatable. Those are two things that Chad Miller wrote. I think one of them he actually modified from someone else, but it keeps you from having to write ADO.NET code and allows you to take your results from your query, which it could be coming from an operating system query, it could be coming from a CSV file, it could be coming from a SQL Server table, turn it into an ADO.NET table so that you can then insert it into your database. All right. Those two functions are inside of the zip file, so they're already there. So there's like 15 scripts, not just 12. They're also up on the TechNet Script Center repository, and I haven't loaded them into my environment yet, so it gives me that error message. So I'm just going to do that for you. Boom. And go ahead and close them just so that we don't have so much on the screen. Go ahead and do that. Run that query. It's going to go, it's going to gather that information, and I'm going to go ahead and instantly store it into a variable just because even though I could spool it out to the screen, show it to you, I want to hold on to it. I don't want to have to run the query twice. So once I've got it into results, I'm going to use alt-datatable's best friend, write-datatable, and I'm going to go ahead and store it in my database. real simple piece of information. The server I'm going to put it in, the database, and of course the table name of where I'm going to put it. This is the table that I created earlier in the script, and then we're going to take we're going to pass in the data, and it's going to be that dollar results variable. So I'm going to do that real quick. If we go ahead and do invoke SQL command, we'll get our results. We'll see that what we did was we queried that same database right here. Again, this is where I showed you where you can, once you open a query, you can make the formatting a little nicer, make it more readable. And then all I did was a very simple select star from data tablespace, so something that you're already used to as a DBA. And then instead of just outputting it to the screen, I output it to OutGridView, because OutGridView, unlike Management Studio, allows you to sort your results, which is kind of nice. All right, so I've got that. It's in the table, and I've already verified that it's in the table. Before we get to compression, if you don't have Enterprise Edition, here's a query that is actually good for you. Just the same, I'm doing the get database, get table, so I'm getting my list of tables, I'm sorting by data space used, I'm doing the same thing that I did on the previous one, but then I'm going to say, hey, where the index space used is greater than the data space used. And how many of you have ever found a table that was, you know, let's say it was a 4 gig table and it had 16 gig of indexes? Anyone? Okay. All right, not just me. Sweet. Always worry. I think the most I've ever found one was about 600% more indexes than actual data. So just to visualize what I'm doing, it's basically I'm going for data space use and I'm looking for anything where this number on the right here, I'll zoom in for you, where the index space used is greater than the data space used, which I think we've got a winner right there in address. Right there. So if I do that, go ahead and run that query, get my list of results back. Obviously, I'm not going to come up with anything earth-shattering here because I've only got AdventureWorks really loaded up on here, but this is a great query to run against all your instances in your back in your shop. It's lightweight, gets you information, and when you find out you've got something where it's got, you know, twice as many twice as much data used up in indexes than data, then you can start taking a look at what you can do to make that run a little faster. One of the things you can do to make it run a little faster is actually compress it, believe it or not. If you're on a system where you're I/O bound and your disks are slow, if you compress them, you know, some tables I've gotten 80% compression, so I've gone from, like, let's say 100 megs to 20 megs. So even if I do a select star, I'm then only pulling back 20 megs instead of the full 100. That's a lot better. If, you know, my developer fails to write something where it actually stops querying or something like that, it'll have less of a severe impact on the server. Not that ever happens where I work, but, you know, if it were to happen. Right. Let me go ahead and... Yeah. Oh, there we go. Right, so walk you through this script real quick. It's nice and easy. Let me separate it out real quick, just kind of make it easier to read. Doing the same, get SQL Server database, get the instance, get the database. I'm actually specifying a single database this time. Getting the list of tables back, and then looking for data space used greater than one. Now, in this case, what's going to happen is, remember when I told you it was already kilobytes? Well, the fact that this is 1 MB, this is going to switch it up and it's going to upsize, and it would normally take bytes and it would convert it to do the 1024 for you so that you didn't have to worry about converting it up to megabytes. Well, because it's already starting with kilobytes instead of bytes, it's going to convert it into gigabytes for you. So when you do this comparison, it's looking for any table where the data space used is greater than 1 gigabyte. The reason I did that is just because if you're looking for things to compress, you know, the smaller tables, maybe you'll get to them, but the bigger tables, that's where you're gonna get your wins, so you might as well just start with those. The rest of this query just, you know, goes, looks for that. I've got two tables where that's the case. So it's obviously on production systems, it'll have more. Here I'm going to just come back and come down to this section of the script where it goes ahead, runs that query before, goes ahead and runs a simple SQL Server command. Let me make sure I covered the fact that when it does its inspection, change my name here. It's checking to see if has compressed partitions is false. So it'll skip over anything that's already been compressed. Right. It's got a limit here. In this case, in this part of the script, it's set to 100 kV. Down here, we do a very simple, we build the SQL statement so that you can see it. I don't know about you, but sometimes I like to see what I'm running before I actually run it. If you want to do that, just basically rip out that portion for a second, run it. It'll go through and it'll loop through all those tables and generate the statement for you, present it out to the screen. So you can see the transact SQL statement that's going to happen. There's two of them here. It's going to do an alter table, rebuild partition, all data compression page. Boom. Simple, easy. Bring this back down. All right. And then it prints a statement first, then goes ahead and executes it. After it gets done, comes down here, does a query, make sure it got everything. One thing I will recommend that you do is consider using MacStop, especially if you're practicing on your own laptop. And if you had a couple multi-gigabyte tables on your laptop and you wanted to do something in the next 20 minutes, yeah, MacStop, because it will actually multi-thread. Found that out the hard way. All right. Did everyone follow that example along? Okay. All right. Anyone lost? Okay. Compressing indexes, same thing. Not going to actually go through it, but you know, obviously just goes through, queries the indexes instead of just the table. Starts with the whole thing, gets the tables, and then gets the indexes on those tables. I got really fancy with it, and I even did a compress index with status bar, just in case you wanted to see little status bars of how many there were to do and how far it had gotten along in the process. So that's all the way at the bottom of the script. All right, 12 minutes, and I'm going to hurry through a couple other things and then allow you to ask questions. Get disk space. I'm going to cover this real quick. It's another pretty dang handy script. This one allows you to find out the disk size or the mount point size on a server. Take that information. You can convert it to gigabytes if you want to. It'll do it by default. You can convert it to megabytes, whatever you want. My friend Laerte Jr., he rewrote it to have commandlet binding and so that you can pipe values into it. You can run this against not only all your SQL servers, but also against all the servers in your enterprise if you want to. Get the information back, store it into a table, and then have a trend history on how much space you have. It's real simple function. Just run it and then come down here. Switch my mode, and then you can pipe machine names in here, and it will give you your information back. Here's my machine, 100 gig, 3 gigs of, 6 gig of space free, percent 5. Obviously, that's kind of bad, but having to go scroll through there and find out that one is 5% free isn't so helpful. So this next one is way more helpful. And I can't actually fully demo it, but I promise you it works. And I know that it works because I'll show you this little part at the bottom. See, I've got my email address in there. And last month, someone didn't take out my email address and they sent me the list. And of course, I was curious, so I went through and I was like, oh, wow, the C drive on that machine, that's about to crash. All right, so this is real simple. All you need to do is supply a list of the machines that you want to query up here. and then at the bottom, put in an actual SMTP server, because I don't have an SMTP server. Put in your email address, not mine. You can put someone else's in the to, but don't put mine. Definitely don't put it in the from. And what this will do is it will come through here. It'll run that the get disk space for you. It will then put together all that information into an HTML table, which is nice, makes it readable inside of an email, especially like on a mobile device, makes it a lot more readable. But then I got a PowerShell MVP by the name of Joel to come in and write this little snippet of code here in the middle. And what it does is it color codes. So if you've got a machine that's got less than 10% space available, it's going to go ahead and color it red for you. And if it's got between 10 and 20, it's going to color it orange. And if it's 20 and 30, it's going to go ahead and color it yellow. It'll then put that into that HTML table for you, email it out, and you'll be able to just take a look at the email, glance and go, and be on with your day. You could obviously, if you want even less information, you just want to know about the bad stuff, you can just put in a where clause and just say, hey, I only want to know about the ones that have less than, say, 30 or 40%, whatever your threshold is, and then filter those out from the results completely. All right. Last one real quick. This little function to get information out of the error log, it's actually written by a friend of mine, Alan Kinzel, who's one of the past board members. He wrote this, not me, just to point out how easy it is for someone to pick it up. He wanted to get some information out of his error logs. He put this together and grabs this information out. If you want to, this is all great information, kind of useful. Pretty much every environment would probably want to know maybe some of this information, dedicated admin, the port the server is listening on when it starts up, stuff like that. If you want to add more information, just copy one of these lines around here, paste it in, and then go in and change it for whatever you're looking for. So if it's that VLF error message, have it look for that VLF error message. Whatever you want to scrape out of the error log, that'll do it for you. And then it's set up to so that you pass it in the name of an instance, and then you can, of course, use one of those loops that I showed you before, query your registered servers, collect every error log off of every machine, and then pull it back to a central point. You can have it email it to you. You can put it into a table. You can not even look at it if you want. But obviously, these are options available to you. So I think that's the last demo I really have time for, so I want to leave some time for questions. Let me switch back over here. And there's some track resources downstairs. Check out the bare metal track. It's got a lot of PowerShell in it for if you're into always-on high availability groups. Oh, yes, please complete the evaluation form. You can win stuff. Scan the tag here to evaluate this. So if you've got you want to take a picture of that real quick. And then I'm going to just put my contact info up and then let you guys ask your questions. Just go ahead and put my contact info back up again. Thank you all for coming out. Hope this was useful to you. Hope you got something out of it that you can use back in your environment. Hope you have a great rest of Tech Ed.